The gourmet balsamic vinegars include cranberry, date, and apple. Think beyond the salad bowl. These are great on everything from veggies to grilled meats. Family Natural Foods, 910 West Grand Avenue.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Keep up on the day's news, talk, and sports on Wisconsin's home for locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Rocket Mortgage.
I'm Stacey Lynn in Washington. Grant Wall has died. He was a well-known soccer writer, and he was frequently heard here on CBS. Our Roxana Saberi is in Doha.
Grant Wall was covering the quarterfinal between the Netherlands and Argentina when he collapsed last night in the press box at a stadium in Qatar. On Tuesday, the 48-year-old CBS sports contributor had written he was on antibiotics for bronchitis, an illness that has spread widely at the World Cup.
The cause of his death is still not known. WNBA star Brittany Griner missed an entire season while she was detained in Russia. Phoenix Mercury's head coach Vanessa Nygaard.
The ache of not having her there definitely affected everyone.
The former Minneapolis police officer who kneeled on George Floyd's back was sentenced to 3.5 years in prison. Attorney Matthew Frank.
Mr. King was an active part of this. He kneeled on George Floyd that entire time.
The CBS News investigation has uncovered some very disturbing arrests in our schools. National investigative correspondent Stephen Starr.
In case after case across the country,
I don't want to hear it.
We see the same scene played out. Federal data from the most recent school year available shows 715 students, fifth grade or younger, arrested at school. And our analysis found black and disabled elementary students were disproportionately more likely to be arrested than white students or those with no disability.
A Keystone Pipeline rupture this week dumped enough oil into a northeastern Kansas creek to nearly fill an Olympic-sized pool. Bill Karam with the Pipeline Safety Trust.
That higher pressure went into effect in 2017, and that's when we started seeing these three largest releases since then.
Is your power station safe from attack? CBS's Peter King reports.
Recent attacks on power stations in North and South Carolina have emergency managers around the country rethinking plans for what happens if their areas are hit. Ron Guerrero is the public safety director in St. Lucie County, Florida.
We do frequent exercises, including a hostile action exercise.
Guerrero compares those drills to preparing for a hurricane or other emergency.
Cases of RSV are on the rise. It's also the worst flu season in over a decade, and COVID is knocking a lot of people down for the count. So here's your reminder to get boosted. Dr. Anthony Fauci is urging everybody.
Do it now. We're getting into the holiday season, and that's when families get together, when transmission occurs, when you're in an indoor setting.
More than 45 million people right now are living in areas with high levels of COVID transmission. That's three times what it was last week. This is CBS News.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Whether you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance yours, Rocket Mortgage can help you get there. For home loan solutions that fit your life, Rocket can.
Attention all business owners who rent or lease space, including storage space. Stop wasting your money paying someone else for your space. You can now save a ton of money and own your own building with the incredible end-of-the-year sale prices from General Steel. That's right, start saving money every month on renting space from others. Just call 888-74-STEEL to see how General Steel can help you save money. Our 50-year structural warranty buildings are custom designed for your needs and save you a ton of money. Call 888-74-STEEL.
Take it from a successful entrepreneur. If you need to expand or start a new business, you need General Steel.
Great team and the competitive pricing is the reason I went with General Steel.
Call 888-74-STEEL now, and you can get any of our popular quick construction structures, including a 40 by 60 foot building or a 50 by 100 clear span building at end of the year savings. Call 888-74-STEEL. That's 888-747-8335. 888-74-STEEL.
Remember when you could turn on the radio and hear a song you'd never heard before? A song that would make you tap your feet, snap your fingers, maybe get up and dance a little? A song that once you heard it made you say, that's a surefire hit. Those days are gone. Or are they? Tune in on Sunday nights from 6 to 8 p.m. and catch Seth Faces the Music on WFHR. The premise is simple. Every week, I pick a theme and find songs that fit the theme. It's so simple, yet so, so good. Join me, won't you, for Seth Faces the Music every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. on locally grown radio, WFHR.
For Civic Media, I'm Melissa Kay with your local news update. Following is a list of upcoming meetings in the listening area for Monday, December 12th. In Wood County, the Public Safety Committee will meet at 9 a.m. in the courthouse. The Joint Legislative Committee will meet at 9 a.m. at the Central Wisconsin Airport in Mosinee. The Citizens Groundwater Group will meet at 2 p.m. at the River Block Building, and the North Central Community Action Program Incorporated Executive Board of Directors will meet at 6 p.m. by teleconference. The Stevens Point Joint Review Board will meet at 3 p.m. in the City Conference Room. The Transportation Commission meeting will take place at 4:45 at Central Transportation. The Portage County Personnel Committee will meet at 6 p.m. The Public Policy and General Government meeting will happen at 6 p.m., followed by the Finance Committee Agenda meeting at 6:10, and the Board of Public Works meeting at 6:35 p.m. In Adams County, the Property and Recreation Committee will meet from 2 to 4 p.m., and the Health and Human Services meeting will take place from 4 to 5:30 p.m. And that's the news update on your locally grown radio station.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. High temperatures reach up to 34 this afternoon under overcast skies, with mixed precipitation likely changing to all snow. Southeasterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Overcast skies tonight, chance for mixed precipitation, lows level off around 28. Cloudy skies tomorrow, daytime highs approaching 35. A dusting of snow today. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 32.
From the home of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news, talk, and sports station.
On this wintry but delightful Saturday, December 10th, my name is Jim Santel. This is a broadcast of Civic Media. This is Morning Cannolis, our weekly, our weekend review, our analysis, our discussion of the most important stories in law, in government, and yes, the aspiration for justice in America. As always, an ambitious but highly achievable agenda this morning, a syllabus that includes everything from soup to nuts, right here in the Shaw, in Waukesha, 540 AM, 101 FM. I am in those studios this morning, again, this morning, talking with you about those important issues of this past week, and also talking this morning about the future in all of those areas of law, government, justice in America, and consistent with our tradition every single Saturday morning from 9 to 11 o'clock in the morning. We're taking your phone calls at 844-967-2789. My outstanding producer, Calvin, is right here in the studio with me, and he will be bringing your calls into our discussion this morning as we take on many, many issues important to the life and the livelihood of the United States of America and those of us right here in the state of Wisconsin. Thank you once again for joining me. This is our 26th show. We're beginning our second six-month tranche of shows, our broadcasts, and I'm delighted to be your host, as always, this morning, Saturday, December 10th. Just like last week, we're going to take a little bit different turn this morning in terms of our agenda, our syllabus. We're not going to do a specific review of the significant events in the history of our world, our nation, and our state, but instead I'm going to hearken back to one event of just 1 year ago yesterday on December 9th of 2021. Just one event, and talking with you about a specific journalism event that happened on that day a year ago. Many of you recall, you know well, that Brian Williams, who was a veteran journalist and a news anchor for many, many years, the NBC Nightly News, concluded a nearly 30-year term of service with NBC News 1 year ago yesterday. And that was a part of his final broadcast called The 11th Hour at that time. It was one of my favorites because I always thought that he brought to that analysis of those stories, that review of the significant issues, many of them late breaking right before he got on the air, a certain balance, a thoughtfulness, an attempt always to try to determine what the facts and circumstances of those events were all about, brought on people who were not necessarily had their hair on fire, certainly partisan, certainly political in many, many ways, but always trying to provide some balance about not only the present, but also the future. So a great, great admiration from me toward Brian Williams, including the time that he was in charge of the NBC Nightly News. He left a year ago yesterday, and as a part of his farewell monologue on the 11th hour a year ago yesterday. Brian Williams expressed his concern for the direction of the United States of America, his nation, his country, and the country's divided politics. And then he concluded also with something that's going to be the theme of our discussion this morning, and that is an aspiration once again for better things, a recognition that life takes circuitous drives and movements as we go forward, but always looking forward to improving the life and our livelihood. He said this at the end of his final broadcast a year ago yesterday. He said, after 28 years of peacock logos, that of course a reference to the NBC peacock logo, after 28 years of peacock logos on much of what I own, it is now my choice to jump without a net into the great unknown. This again, Brian Williams. As I do for the first time in my 62 years, my biggest worry, he said, is for my country. Brian Williams went on to say this. The truth is that I'm not a liberal or a conservative, again, following up on that sense of yes, some partisan perspective, but trying to have that balance in his show. He said, I am an institutionalist. He said, I believe in this place, talking presumably about journalism in America and maybe even NBC News. I believe in this place, and in my love of country, I yield to no one. But the darkness on the edge of town, Brian Williams said, has spread to the main roads and highways and neighborhoods. It is now at the local bar and the bowling alley, at the school board and the grocery store. And it must be acknowledged and answered for, he said. Grown men and women who swore an oath to our Constitution, elected by their constituents, possessing the kind of college degrees I could only dream of, have decided to join the mob and become something they are not, while hoping we somehow forget who they were. They decided to burn it all down with us inside. And that should scare you to no end. Those the comments, the thoughts of Brian Williams as he was departing NBC News. He went on to say, regrets, I've had a few. But then again, a few to mention. What a wonderful ride, he said, it has been. Where else, as a kid like me, could I meet presidents and kings and the occasional rock star? He went on to say, these lovely testimonials that had preceded him in this program that I can never truly repay make me hyper aware that it has been and remains a wonderful life, invoking the wonderful Jimmy Stewart movie. He said, it's as though I wake up every morning, tomorrow morning in Bedford Falls. Although tomorrow, he said, I will wake up in the America of the year 2021, a nation unrecognizable to those who came before us and sought to protect it, which is what you must do now. Let me repeat that one. It's again, a nation for Brian Williams and for many of us, unrecognizable to those who came before us and those who fought protect it, which is what you must do now. Again, Brian Williams talking about this darkness on the edge of town that concerned him about the future of our nation and those people who, having taken an oath, have decided, as he said, to join the mob and do some things that are contrary to that oath and contrary to the purposes of our nation. Burning it all down, he said, with all of us inside, that should scare us to no end. Now, the theme of this morning is not fear. It is not scaring you, but it is an appropriate invocation for what we're going to be talking about this morning, because there are concerns, if not, in fact, darkness at the edge of town. Nonetheless, reasons to be concerned, as there have always been, some very good things coming out of the election of early December, of November, of course, and other aspects of our nation, which we're also going to highlight in this hour and down the road. Some legislative accomplishments early this year and also just these past several days. It should be heralded and embraced, but also at the same time, taking up on the invocation, the encouragement from Brian Williams to remain ever vigilant and to continue to pursue those things that our founding fathers anticipated our nation should be all about. And so it's pursuant to that commission from Brian Williams of a year ago that we're going to talk this morning about some of the challenges, some of the things that are in fact at the edge of town, maybe not darkness, maybe some possibilities of hope and light, but also some reasons to continue to pursue the fight to ensure that democracy is safe and secure in our nation. We're going to spend some time talking about major cases before the Supreme Court. Just this past week, two huge oral arguments, one involving the future of democracy. That's not hyperbole. And second, another one involving LGBTQIA rights and the intersection with the First Amendment, the possibility that the Supreme Court may carve out some exceptions to discrimination laws under a case called 303 Creative versus Salinas. We're going to follow that up with some discussion this first hour, updating you and all of us on what's going on in the Mar-a-Lago investigation of the documents seized at that location of the former president. Talk about something that happened just yesterday in the federal district court having to do with contempt. We're going to talk as well about January 6th. Again, very much in the news this past week for a couple of important reasons, referrals, and of course, the special report coming out very, very shortly. All of that's all going to be a part of our first hour or so. Then in our second hour, we're going to talk about some other matters also on the agenda of our nation this past week. We know that the Trump Corporation, the Trump companies, were convicted in a state court in New York State for tax violations. This is a state felony conviction. We're going to talk about the consequences of that. What does that mean in terms of finding a corporation guilty of a state offense? We're going to talk about the consequences of that, both for the Trump Corporation and for all of us, understanding what has happened and what may happen in the future. Also going to spend some time, as I promised, talking about some other major legislation of much earlier this year, springtime of this year, having to do with the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women's Act, and also some very new and very important anti-lynching legislation, reasons to celebrate, because in fact, the United States Congress, as it did this past week in another matter involving marriage and same-sex marriage in America, passed some major legislation this past week, but also much earlier this year, having to do with major civil rights issues and the enforcement of laws and the insurance to all victims, regardless of who you are, of ensuring that you've got a say in our prosecutions in this country and providing other support for victims of crime in America. Lots to talk about this morning on Morning Cannolis. Again, our weekend analysis, our discussion, our review of those major stories in government and law and justice in our nation, the United States of America. So let's begin that discussion. And once again, as always, taking your phone calls at 844-967-2789. We're going to begin by talking about the United States Supreme Court. And we have spent a good deal of time in the last 6 months on this broadcast and other broadcasts of civic media, including just yesterday and the day before out of the very Waukesha studios in which Calvin and I are present right now. We spent a lot of time talking about major cases pending before the United States Supreme Court this term, 2022-2023. We've identified about 12, maybe 13 of the major cases. As of today, the United States Supreme Court has decided to take to hear something just in excess of 40 cases in total. Doesn't, as you well know, is not obliged to take every single case. Many, many people want to be heard by the United States Supreme Court. They do what's called grant writs of certiorari. That's a Latin phrase, a legal phrase that basically means we're going to command the lower court to send us the record. That is their way of saying, yes, we're going to entertain this particular case, this particular contest, this challenge between parties. We're going to entertain that case. We're going to have briefs submitted by the attorneys or the parties in this matter. And then we're also going to have oral argument on them. And the oral arguments, as we know, began in early October with the start of this new term, and they have continued until this past week. Supreme Court has scheduled more of those oral arguments for January, February, into the new year, and probably going to issue some major decisions in June of 2023. Right after the break, we're going to talk about the first of those major oral arguments, a case called Moore versus Harper that happened just this past week in the United States Supreme Court. Stay with us for that important discussion of this major case on the docket of America.
Hello, DoorWorks. This is Kathy.
Quick.
I gotta talk to Doorman.
Doorman here? How may I help you?
Doorman, you gotta help me, and quick. Aw, man, I just backed into my garage door. Yeah, I know, stupid. Thought it was up, but you gotta come and help me right away before the wife finds out. I'll never hear the end of it.
Ah, I see. I'll be right over. Us guys gotta stick together, you know.
DoorWorks will replace what's necessary to get your door working just as good as new. Call Doorman anytime, 424-5777.
Join Max Inc. Radio this New Year's Eve as we present live at thespaceship.tv. Max Inc. Radio will broadcast live from the spaceship.tv studios 6 p.m. to midnight, plus live performances from the Civil Engineers. Linda and the Zeros. Porky's Groove Machine. Live streaming video at thespaceship.tv and live on this Civic Media station. Let's party New Year's Eve starting at 6 p.m. live from thespaceship.tv. Happy New Year's from Civic Media and Max Inc. Radio. We are local music.
Lofi's Holiday Sweepstakes is back. The Bakers of Country Hearth would like to put a little more jingle in your holiday this season by giving you a chance to win one of two $500 prizes or the grand prize of $1,000. Winners will each receive a check that can be used for travel, gifts, or just celebrating with family and friends, whatever makes their holiday more jolly. For complete rules and to enter for your chance to win, visit countryhearthbreads.com/sweeps.
From Alexander Field to the Central Business District, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM. The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
We are back. Thank you once again for joining me on this Saturday morning, December 10th, here in the studios of the Shaw in Waukesha, WAUK, 540 AM, 101 FM. As always, Kelvin and I are taking your phone calls at 844-967-2789 as we dive headfirst into a discussion this morning of two major Supreme Court cases that had their oral arguments just this past week, one on Monday, one on Wednesday. Let's start with Wednesday in particular. Those of you who listened in the past know that I've spent a lot of time talking about this case called Moore versus Harper and proposed to you and to anyone who also will listen, family, friends, that sort of a group out there, that this is a matter for tremendous concern and attention by all Americans. How does this case come about? The petitioners in this case are some Republican leaders of the North Carolina legislature. They're upset, they're not happy that the North Carolina Supreme Court, the highest state court in North Carolina, struck down, basically invalidated the congressional map that they had drawn after the 2020 census. We did the same thing here in Wisconsin. Virtually every other state in the country did the same thing, redrawing lines based upon where the populations of our states are located. And the reason for the North Carolina Supreme Court doing that was and remains that objectively, as the court said, the North Carolina legislature had accomplished an extreme partisan gerrymander. The court found that the map violated various provisions of the North Carolina Constitution, arguably as well the Voting Rights Act, including a guarantee that all elections shall be free. That coming out again of the North Carolina Supreme Court. The court specifically found that the map violated various provisions of that Constitution, and in so doing, they did what many courts do out there, which is to review the results of line drawing by legislatures. We've had that here in Wisconsin by lower courts, certainly by the Wisconsin Supreme Court, as you well know. A bedrock principle of federalism, that the state courts have final authority over the meaning of state constitutions and laws and principles enacted pursuant to it. Other courts, including the Supreme Courts of Florida and Pennsylvania, have issued similar decisions invalidating congressional districts. And in most of those cases, the Supreme Court has not gotten involved. But the North Carolina legislature, again, unhappy with what the North Carolina Supreme Court had done, not only appealed this case, ultimately landing before the United States Supreme Court, not only did they contest this notion that somehow they engaged in an improper gerrymander by drawing the new lines in North Carolina, but they also decided to revive this long discredited, this fringe, this quite literally discredited doctrine. It's not even a doctrine, perhaps dressing it up way too much. A theory, many people say, known as the independent state legislature theory, or ISLT. That's a lot. It's a mouthful of language, a lot of words, but it's important to understand the theory rests, of course, as we have said, on the Constitution itself, the United States Constitution. The Elections Clause, which says that the times and places and manner of federal elections, that's important, these are federal elections, shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof. Makes pretty much good sense, right? We know that the federal government doesn't come into our particular cities, our villages and towns and conduct elections. That is left to the states to establish the rules and regulations, the times, the places, the manner of those elections. Although various people from various areas and certainly vying for various spots, local spots, school board spots, county spots, state spots, and yes, federal spots are often on the same ballot. And again, the Supreme Court in the Elections Clause, as it's interpreted by the Supreme Court in the Constitution, prescribes that that's the way that's going to be done. The clause frees the state legislature from restraints imposed by the state Constitution when regulating federal elections in many ways. And that's what the ISLT maintains. That's the fundamental notion. Somehow, this clause frees up the state legislature to be free from the court involvement in operating, regulating federal elections, to go further in articulating what this marginal theory is, prevents state courts from enforcing those restraints when the legislature passes a law that violates them. So the usual checks and balances we always think about would not apply. The ISLT would effectively give the legislature power over the manner of those elections, not only to set them in the first place, but also to resolve any differences about how they're administered, but also perhaps even the selection of the winners, if you will. We've talked in the past about the implications of that, and also even in the Electoral College. And of course, we know that there are a lot of problems with that theory. The legislature meant more than a specific body of elected representatives when our founding fathers put this together in 1787. The word basically for them encompassed a whole power, the entire state legislature, if you will, that makes laws. For example, a governor who can veto a congressional map. And second, the other problem with this is the legislature meant a specific political body. Even if that is the case, there is no indication that our framers understood that the courts would have no involvement in that. Just the opposite. They plainly put together a major article, Article 3 in the Constitution, that contemplates the role of courts, federal courts. And beyond that, since the start of our republic, state courts have imposed limits on election laws. We've seen that right here in the state of Wisconsin, passed by the legislature. That tradition casts doubt on this hypothesis, this doctrine, this theory, if you will, that the Election Clause contains some secret sort of sweeping limit on the authority of courts. It simply is not true. So what happened? What happened this past Wednesday when it came to the oral argument about this? Well, one of the advocates in favor, in opposition to the North Carolina legislature, supporting what the North Carolina Supreme Court had done, was a fellow named Neil Katyal. He's a former acting Solicitor General in the Department of Justice, and he talked about the blast radius from ISLT that would sow elections chaos if, in fact, the Supreme Court were to endorse this concept. The ISLT, he said, refuted by 233 years of history, that's exactly right, as I've just indicating, is rejected by the Articles of Confederation, a part of the oral argument this past week, rejected by the early state constitutions, rejected by founding practices throughout our nation, simply not a part of our tradition. And to accept that theory, he told the justices, he said this, you'd have to ignore the text, the history, and the structure of our federal constitution, as well as nearly every state constitution today. Now, he faced a lot of opposition, but also a lot of support among the Supreme Court. And right after the break, we're going to talk about how those justices came down just this past Wednesday, give you some predictions about what may or may not happen in this case. Stay with us.
Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM. News, talk, and sports from Vesper to Plover.
Quality Foods puts you first. No self-checkouts here. Get the groceries you want, bagged, and loaded in your car if you'd like. That's quality service from real people you can expect. Delivery and pickup are available at West Grand. Visit QualityFoodsWisRapids.com. Or if you can't order online, just call West Grand and they'll take it. Don't forget the deli for delicious meats, cheese, salads, and complete hot and cold meals. Quality Foods, West Grand and Baker Drive, locally owned and putting you and the community first.
It's the most wonderful time of the year, a time when love and decency and generosity of spirit are their own rewards. Come renew your Christmas spirit with Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater's performance of Miracle on 34th Street. Feel the joy and magic of the season with shows on December 9th and 10th and 15th through 17th, all at 7 p.m., and a matinee performance on the 17th at 2 p.m. Located in the Centralia Center, 220 3rd Avenue South. Buy tickets online at wrctheater.org.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When we got back from the Working Class Heroes radio tour, one of the things people asked is, what'd you learn? As you're going through rural America, what'd you find? Found angry people, and angry for cause. But the sad reality is they've been fed decades of outrage candy, and they're angry at the wrong people. They're angry at their neighbors. They're not angry at the very wealthy where they should be. Be sure to tune in live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. across the Civic Media Radio Network, and have your voice heard.
I'm Naheem Hines, running back for the Indianapolis Colts and proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14, and I watched her struggle. But MDA helped her get the best treatments and care, and they also help kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan, and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. From day one, they've treated me like family at my local care center. MDA is the only one that funds over 150 care centers across the U.S. to help provide state-of-the-art care for adults and kids like me.
For over 70 years, MDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and other related neuromuscular diseases. They fund the research for breakthrough treatments, care, and cures. And MDA provides support to thousands of families like mine and Ethan's in communities like yours. Thanks to MDA, kids and adults can live life to its fullest. Join us and learn more at MDA.org today.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media, I'm Melissa Kay with your local news update. Mid-State Technical College in Wisconsin Rapids will return to indoor graduation ceremonies, hosting their mid-year commencement ceremony on Saturday, December 10th. Mid-State will highlight their Protective and Human Services program at the ceremony with the keynote address from Rick Anderson, Mid-State's 2022 Distinguished Alumnus and Associate Dean of Protective and Human Services. In-person attendance is reserved for ticket holders. This ceremony will be live-streamed on mstc.edu/graduation starting at 1:30 p.m. on Saturday. The Roadway Inn and Suites in Stevens Point has experienced a setback in their renovation plans due to flooding from burst pipes. City officials say a window was left open, which allowed the pipes to freeze. The hotel has experienced issues over the past few years and are working on fixing the problems identified. Even with this delay, the city is confident the hotel will be up and running again in 2023. And that's the news on your locally grown radio station.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. High temperatures reach up to 34 this afternoon under overcast skies, with mixed precipitation likely changing to all snow. Southeasterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour.
Overcast skies. Tonight, chance for mixed precipitation. Lows level off around 28. Cloudy skies. Tomorrow, daytime highs approaching 35. A dusting of snow today. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 32.
In that effort to talk with the justices by two other attorneys named Don Verrilli and Solicitor General Elizabeth Perlegar, both of them, all of them, arguing, of course, that this independent state legislature doctrine, this theory that is out there and animating this case coming out of North Carolina, is in fact appropriately rejected by the United States Supreme Court. Katyal and the others faced some fairly intense pushback from justices who we knew from past writings and observations and things that they have articulated in the public domain, probably favorable to this ISLT. Those are Justices Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch, and Sam Alito. At least those three, fairly strong believers in the ISLT. Katyal and Verrilli and Perlegar all pushing back on that, maintaining, as they did, effectively, from my view, that history did not support this notion and that it should properly be rejected. The real debate over all of this is exactly how much deference the Supreme Court should give to the state courts. What does this mean? Does history mean something, or should we reinterpret for the first time in about 233 years this language in the Constitution that does give authority to the state legislature to make decisions about the trappings of elections, but nonetheless not to the exclusion of the courts or other portions of government? Well, the question is, what is SCOTUS going to do about all of this? Should the deference to the courts be sky high? Should it be incredibly high? Should it be much more limited? Should the court, as an awful lot of us believe, reject this notion, jettison it completely, and go back to where we are, continue with where we are today in terms of acknowledging and embracing the role that our state courts have in adjudicating challenges to the processes of elections and also making decisions when those are appropriate about the winners, the losers, and as I said before, even about things related to electoral college. That's why this issue is so important, not just for the immediate elections here in Wisconsin and around the country, but in 2024, as we know, we're going to be electing another president, perhaps the same president, perhaps someone new, but the electoral college could arguably be affected by this adjudication of Moore versus Harper as well. In the end, as we look at votes, as I said, we've got probably three justices, Thomas, Gorsuch, and Alito, squarely on the side of supporting the ISLT, which is a concern. We also know that in the past, Brett Kavanaugh has expressed some interest in this, probably during the course of the oral argument, wrestling somewhat with, as I said, the extent to which the court should have deference to this theory, deference to the courts, balancing this, having some difficulty with it, but probably in the end coming down on the side of those other three, that is Gorsuch, Alito, and Thomas. And so there may, in fact, be at least four votes to support the North Carolina legislature and overturn the ways that we have been doing elections in this country for nearly 240 years. So the question is, what about the other justices on the Supreme Court? How did they play out during the course of this oral argument of just Wednesday of this past week? Well, we know, once again, that the three so-called liberals, Ketanji Brown Jackson, Sonia Sotomayor, and Elena Kagan, all of them expressing horror that this case is even here, which is a significant point to make. Why is our Supreme Court even taking this case on? Why are we even looking at it? And Elena Kagan herself was very articulate in describing the horrific consequences if a full-blown, full-throated invocation and description of this ISLT is adopted by the court, describing all sorts of things, some of which I mentioned again this morning, all sorts of things that could affect the impact, the meaning of your vote when you go to vote in elections for our federal representatives. The other thing that she commented about was implicitly that if you open the door to this, what other kinds of things might a Supreme Court down the road use this doctrine to expand into? Where does this go long term beyond just the North Carolina case and its import for states around the nation? But where else does it affect? What other kinds of voting, not just federal voting, might it have its tendrils into? And so she's raising all of that, Elena Kagan was. So plainly, she and her two colleagues on the so-called liberal side of the bench providing the three votes. And then we've got two others. We've got John Roberts, Chief Justice, who again was expressing, like Kavanaugh, some level of concern about this. I suspect in the end, as do folks who are listening to the oral argument itself, that the Chief Justice, as he often tries to do, maybe trying to broker some mid-level resolution of this, where there's a majority of the Supreme Court that doesn't reject it entirely, but doesn't embrace it entirely. And I'd offer to you, as did the other three, that that's a dangerous position too. Even opening the door to this and opening the possibility that it could be applied even in some middling, some incomplete way in our nation for our federal elections could be very, very problematic. But again, the Chief Justice probably now concerned, maybe in fact siding with the other three so-called liberals on the bench to make four votes in that direction. Not entirely clear. Roberts, of course, always trying to be the conciliator, tried to do that, as we know, with Dobbs, the case that overruled Roe versus Wade back in June. Unsuccessful in doing that. What would he be doing here? We don't know, but some indication that he's got concerns about this as well. And then, what does that lead to? Well, who is the Supreme Court Justice I have not spoken about up to now? Her name is Amy Coney Barrett. It appears that Amy Coney Barrett was skeptical about the arguments being made by the legislature, by the North Carolina legislature. She was pretty tough on the attorney for the legislature. She suggested that the formalistic test, that's what she called it, was unworkable. It was a stab at trying to deal with our precedent, which cut against him. She's saying that about the attorney advocating on behalf of the legislature. So putting him in a box, if you will. Lawyer for the legislature tried to draw a line in response to some of the very difficult questioning by Amy Coney Barrett between substantive and procedural issues, things that lawyers and many of you, I suspect, are also very much attuned to. Amy Coney Barrett, a former law school professor, wasn't buying any of that. She said, as a former civil procedure teacher, I can tell you that it is a hard line to draw and a hard line to teach students in that context as well. She also pointedly noted that the standards that the attorney for the state legislature was adopting for implementing the ISLT were not more manageable than the North Carolina Supreme Court standards for measuring gerrymanders, which is the real focus of all this case. It was a fairly polite way of saying on behalf of this particular Supreme Court Justice, Amy Coney Barrett, that this position was one of hypocrisy. Her questions for the other three, for Katya Alvarelli and Preligar, who again were advocating against the ISLT, were much more sympathetic, it appeared to me. She simply was asking how the court should write a decision rejecting this. So she was plainly in that vein. Strongly implied to those other lawyers that the Supreme Court did not even have jurisdiction to hear this case, and that might be a basis for its resolution as well. Overall, it sounded as if Amy Coney Barrett might, in the end, be the deciding factor. We don't know precisely how John Roberts will come down. We don't know precisely how it is that Brett Kavanaugh will come down. But the prediction as of Wednesday afternoon, after this oral argument was done, was that probably not quite as devastating as it was anticipated to be. At least three justices, again, the Chief Justice, Roberts, Kavanaugh, and then Amy Coney Barrett, all expressing some various levels of concern about this. All you need is five votes to reject it. You need five votes to embrace it as well. And so if two of those join the other three, Gorsuch and Alito and Thomas, then we've got a decision in the opposite direction. But we will wait to see. But fascinating oral argument. I commend, as I always do, your reviewing, your listening to that oral argument. It is accessible on the Supreme Court website. You can go online, pull down that folder, and they posted through the good auspices of the Chief Justice, all of the arguments of all recent presentations to the Supreme Court, including this one in Moore versus Harper. Again, we're going to wait probably about 6 months or so to determine whether or not the ISLT is adopted, changing the way in which we vote in America. What can you do? What can you do about this? Many people ask on a regular basis to many scholars who are much brighter than I, who have looked at this at much greater length than I have, what do you do about this? Well, I hearken back to the time about a year or so ago when we heard also the oral argument in Dobbs. It was very clear in December of last year the Supreme Court was about to overrule Roe versus Wade. We knew that in December, and so we had 6 months or so to wait and see. And the advocacy, of course, was legal, and it was certainly in the media. But the nation was not yet attuned to this notion that this major case, Roe versus Wade, was about to be overturned. This notion of opening the door about whether or not there's a privacy right protection in the Constitution. The seriousness of this was not known. And then we woke up, even after the release of that draft opinion in the spring, we woke up on a June morning and found that indeed the world had changed. And then in many ways, the country responded to that decision. Protests, disagreements, and arguments. Now is the time, if you will. If you are concerned about democracy, concerned about what this case could mean, now is the time. I've been an advocate in the old school vein to reach out to members of the Supreme Court, write a letter to the Chief Justice, write a letter to Brett Kavanaugh, write a letter to Amy Coney Barrett telling her that you support what she seemingly was suggesting, write a letter to her saying that she should in fact join those others who are reasonable and thoughtful in advocating against this ISLT and bringing it to an end. Otherwise, advocate, let people know in our nation's schools, our classrooms, talking about the significance of this so that whatever happens in June, we are not surprised. We are not, in fact, looking back and saying, gosh, I wish we had advocated for something different. The same holds for a case that was argued on Monday of this week. Again, a busy week before the United States Supreme Court. This case called 303 Creative versus Alanis. Alanis, 303 Creative versus Alanis. And in this particular case, the Supreme Court had before it a question about the intersection between religious liberties, more specifically First Amendment liberties, and laws barring discrimination based on sexual orientation. How does this come about? We have talked about this case in the past. It's worth it to revisit it because, once again, this does have significant implications for the future of not just the LGBTQIA community, but also civil rights more generally in America. How does this case come out? Well, we know that there's a woman named Lori Smith, S-M-I-T-H. She owns a design company in Colorado, and that design company provides wedding-related services by crafting, putting together, assembling websites for people who are going to get married. And it says that as a part of her process, she will engage, she will contract with you if you are going to get married, and will put that website together for you. Her position is that a Colorado law that forbids discrimination based upon sexual orientation by businesses open to the public prohibits her from exercising her First Amendment rights to be opposed to same-sex marriage. Following all of that, she alleges that her own faith, her own religious, tells her that same-sex marriage is wrong, and her particular position before the lower courts and now the United States Supreme Court in this case called Alanis is that by virtue of the application of this Colorado law to her, it basically prohibits her from expressing her views on her website that same-sex marriage is wrong, implicitly conveyed by her refusal to engage in business practices, to contract with same-sex couples in providing wedding services, specifically wedding-related websites that she would prepare for them. She is fine with celebrating the marriages of heterosexual unions and couples, but she says that requiring her to provide those services to gay and lesbian couples violates her rights to free speech. And so all of this has been the subject of lower courts. Interestingly, a lot of this has not yet been resolved because in many ways the case has not been fully developed. And so the Supreme Court oral argument of Monday of this week rested in large part about what happened here. Right before after the break, we're going to talk more about what this case meant, how the Supreme Court justices came down, and a likely prediction in June again about what the Supreme Court may do in this major civil rights case in America. Stay with us for that.
When the weather is cold, it's wonderful to warm up with freshly roasted coffee or a delicious tea like turmeric ginger. Family Natural Foods carries organic and Wisconsin roasted coffees and teas to delight your senses and warm you from the inside out. Find Wisconsin-based Wonder State, Liberation Farms, and Ruby Coffee roasted local and fresh. They also carry Reishi Tea, an independently owned Milwaukee company inspired by tradition. Warm up at Family Natural Foods.
Need help paying for health care? As a health insurance navigator, my job is to help people find affordable or low-cost options. Call the 211 helpline to find an expert near you or go to WisCovered.com. Paid for by Covering Wisconsin.
Mom used to scream about Dad's drinking. It drove me crazy till Mom went to Al-Anon. If someone's drinking troubling you, you might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon or Alateen family group from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON or go to Al-Anon.org.
I'm Tumani. When I was younger, I may have did some stupid things. I committed some crimes. I even got shot. But I'm not a criminal.
That's right. I'm Jamal. I work for Youth Advocate Programs. Yeah, I was Tumani's advocate, helping him stay out of jail, stay in the neighborhood, get a job, and work hard to see a better future for himself. If you have a change of mindset, you can have a change of action.
As a little kid, I experienced trauma and I acted out. Made some mistakes, but I'm not a mistake.
No, she's a good student and a great kid. As Jalen's YAP advocate, I'm always here for her. With the Youth Advocate Programs, I was able to connect with Jalen.
YAP is a community-based alternative to youth incarceration, congregate placement, and neighborhood violence. After completing our program, 86% of participants were arrest-free. YAP works.
And now, I'm a YAP advocate, helping kids like me find a better way.
Youth Advocate Programs. Others talk social change. We make it happen. Learn how at yapinc.org.
Your hometown station for news, talk, and sports. Locally grown radio is 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM. Your fix for progressive talk from Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
We are back. We are talking this morning about the United States Supreme Court. And right before the break, we began to chat about this case called 303 Creative versus Alanis, this very important case affecting religious liberties, free speech liberties, and the intersection with laws barring discrimination based upon sexual orientation and gender identity. We know that this case comes before the Supreme Court in the wake of another one that you certainly recall well. This is the so-called cake shop case coming out of Colorado as well. 303 Creative, in very many ways, is a sequel to that earlier case. In that case, a case called Masterpiece Cake Shop versus Colorado Civil Rights Commission, that was in 2018. In that case, the claim was that the First Amendment permitted a Colorado baker to refuse to bake a wedding cake for a same-sex couple because that baker's cakes were a form of artistic expression. So you'll call that well. The Supreme Court, in the end, seemingly wrestling with, again, this intersection between First Amendment rights, religious rights, and the rights to be free from discrimination. In the end, the Supreme Court sent the case back to the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, finding they didn't particularly care for the way in which the Colorado Rights Commission failed to grant an exemption under the Colorado law. It has to do with a lot of legal intersections of the law and process here. And so the decision was never really rendered, never really wrestled with in a way that resulted in a clear-cut opinion about which is the higher, more important proposition. What about the First Amendment right to free speech? What about the First Amendment right to religious liberty, as opposed to the equally compelling right of all Americans, including those in the LGBTQ community, be free from discrimination when it comes to commercial enterprises and contracting? And so it is back before the United States Supreme Court in this case called Alanis, 303 Creative versus Alanis. What do we know about the Supreme Court oral argument on Monday? Once again, let's chat about how the Supreme Court justices came down. And unlike Moore versus Harper, where there's some reason to believe Supreme Court will reject this crazy idea about the courts not being involved in federal dispositions of challenges in federal elections. Here, it is increasingly clear that the Supreme Court is likely going to side in favor of this web designer who has said that she's got a free speech right and a right to discriminate against the LGBT community. So let's talk about how the Supreme Court may, in fact, get there. We know that a lot of the justices focus on the difference between a client's message and that of the designer. Neil Gorsuch, for example, said that's really at the heart of a lot of this. He was referring to the question of whether the speech at issue was, as he said, expressing the maker's point of view or the couple's point of view. Justice Brett Kavanaugh, sort of on the same side, if you will, different take, exploring the difference between businesses engaged in expression and ones simply selling goods out there in the community. This is what Brett Kavanaugh said. He said the case comes down to a fairly narrow question. Are they more like restaurants and the jewelers and the tailors? He said, suggesting that those businesses are not engaged in protected speech. Or are they more like, you know, the publishing houses and other free speech analogs? Wrestling with that as well, asking some questions about the attorneys presenting this case. Amy Coney Barrett, we spent a lot of time talking about her response couple of days later in the Moore case. She had a lot to say about this case on Monday. She said, it's about the message and not about the sexuality of the couple. She went on to say that line-drawing questions in this case were difficult, which they presumably are, and that where the court drew them would be consequential. She said, however we decide this case obviously applies to others. And again, indicating that somewhat sympathetic to the web designer and her position that the Colorado law imposes upon her an unconstitutional restriction on her First Amendment rights. Let's talk about what the others said. Sam Alito said that there was a difference between discrimination based on race versus sexual orientation. In particular, he asked whether it's fair to equate opposition to same-sex marriage with opposition to interracial marriage. He noted, he observed from the bench that Justice Kennedy's majority opinion that established a constitutional right to same-sex marriage in 2015. You may recall that that's the Obergefell case, Obergefell versus Hodges, basically said that honorable people opposed such unions on religious grounds. This is Justice Alito talking about Justice Kennedy's position. The court's three liberals, of course, expressed great qualms, great concerns about the damage that a ruling in favor of the designer could do to gay rights, to LGBT rights, to be free from discrimination, and to combat discrimination. Sonia Sotomayor, among those three, said this. She said, this would be the first time in the court's history that the court may, in fact, rule that a commercial business open to the public, serving the public, that it could refuse to serve a customer based on race, sex, religion, or sexual orientation. Again, indicating that you open the door to this and you've got the possibility that many, many other implications will flow. A huge implication that she is identifying here. She also joined the others, playing the Elena Kagan and Ketanji Brown Jackson, in opposing this notion that somehow these things have got to be resolved in favor of a clear and unequivocal free speech right vested in this website designer. My own view is, as I've said before, that these things can, in fact, be reconciled. A lot of people, myself included, feel strongly that we're not asking this website designer or other people in commercial enterprise to give up their religious beliefs, their spiritual beliefs, however those may be founded, wherever those may come from. But we are, in fact, asking you, and we have throughout the last half century or so, if even more than that, provided in this nation that people of all immutable characteristics, including those regarding sexual orientation, gender identity, race, national origin, ability, disability, familial status, economic status, all sorts of things, all those immutable characteristics should not be the focus, should not be the targets of discrimination. And that's what the Colorado law is all about. And so my own view, and I think it is the view of those justices who are siding with the state of Colorado, that these things can be reconciled without compelling anyone to give up their views, however founded or unfounded those might be. The concern, of course, is As Justice Kagan said, this really depends on the facts of the case, and some of those facts are not especially clear. There has not been a clear invocation of this Colorado law with respect to this provider of website services. And so, as Justice Kagan said, it depends on exactly what Ms. Smith is being asked or compelled to do, and that matters, she said. And we have a case without any of that in it. She was basically bemoaning the fact that the record in this matter, even though the subject of review in the lower court has not yet been developed fully, because you don't have this case and controversy situation. Ketanji Brown Jackson joined in that, and she said that this case asked whether the shopping mall that wanted to mimic the atmosphere of the movie It's a Wonderful Life could refuse to include children who are not white in its pictures with Santa. So lots of hypotheticals out there, again, indicating that the three so-called liberals, Ketanji Brown Jackson, Elena Kagan, and Sonia Sotomayor, plainly opposed to this, but probably we are headed in the direction of a Supreme Court on some basis.
As you go about your daily life, look closer. As you gather with family and friends, look closer. Right in your community, there are youth who don't have the home, warmth, and healing you have. So, look closer. Every year across America, a staggering 4.2 million youth are homeless or trafficked. Covenant House is the national leader providing safe housing for youth 50 years strong. Tonight, 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed. And tomorrow, they will wake up surrounded by love. Every youth who walks into Covenant House gets clean clothes, hot meals, medical care, and a safe place to sleep 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in sites across America, to help them fulfill the great promise of their lives. So, look closer at Covenant House and help us fight youth homelessness. To help or get help, go to
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
From Lakeway Z.